You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, thrilled to bring in our next guest. He's the son of Hall of Fame legendary college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian, Danny Tarkanian. Danny, who played for his dad once upon a time, obviously followed his career and has now released the new book, Rebel Without a Cause. This is the true story of Jerry Tarkanian. Danny, it is a pleasure to get you on the show today. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
I think we're going to have a fun conversation. You got to play for your dad, so you got to see him as a coach, got to know him as a father, got to follow his legendary career. You played for your dad, and I believe, if I read correctly, you guys won 24 consecutive games while you played. You saw some historical stuff as a player as well.
Yeah, I played for him from 1981 to 84. I came from Dixie Junior College my first year. I left the school as a leading person with assists and steals for game season and career. I didn't score very much, and that probably made it easier for me to play for my father because I hardly ever shot the ball. I passed it to all my other players, and they loved it that I didn't shoot, and they got to shoot.
Well, definitely. We'll get into that in just a moment, what it was like to play for your father. First off, I want to talk about the book. It's the true story of Jerry Tarkanian, Rebel with a Cause. I have it sitting in front of me right now. The first chapter I went to, and maybe I'm a little bit weird for doing this, but right off the bat, the chapter that stood out to me was the shortest stint for a coaching career in the NBA. I was really curious about Jerry Tarkanian's time with the San Antonio Spurs, and we can touch on that in just a moment. First things first, what was your inspiration for putting this book together?
Well, I grew up, as I mentioned in the book, I was a ball boy for my father. Then I was a former player, former coach, and actually his attorney through much of his NCAA battles. And I watched how his career was misconstrued, and the national media would write stories that weren't very accurate. And the NCAA had so much control over the media at that time that there never was a real true story about how my father was able to succeed going through the things that he did. And I wanted to write that. And then most recently, there's been so many stories about the NCAA and problems my father had to complain about the NCAA 40, 50 years ago, and he was shrugged off as just a bitter person who got caught cheating. Now you're seeing that these stories, same things he said before are true, and other schools are experiencing the same thing, and I thought it was a good timing for the book.
Yeah, you know, I guess my perception of Jerry Tarkanian has always been this, a legendary coach that maybe he did play by the rules, maybe he didn't play by the rules. I mean, I guess it's all in perception, right? I know there's a lot of insight into that in this book, but that's always been my thought. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Well, you know, and that's one reason why I wanted to write it, to clarify, because I had all the documentation from the NCAA investigations, the court documents, their investigation notes. Listen, my father cheated like every other coach in the country is cheating. You have to cheat with what the NCAA rules are today and age kids that are playing. Just for background for the listeners, the NCAA enforcement arm started in the 1950s, and the rules that were made applied to the kids that were playing back then, kids from affluent families with discretionary income. From the 60s on, the poor inner-city African-American kids that did not have any discretionary income, in fact, their families could barely afford the places they were living in at their home location, started dominating in the collegiate sports, and these same rules didn't apply. For example, you can't pay for a player to come to your school. So if you recruit a kid out of Fort Apache in the Bronx in New York, one of the worst high-rise areas in the entire country, very poor Richie Adams was a player, and he wants to come to school at UNLV. How did he get there? It's a violation to pay for him to get there. And every coach in the country who's recruiting these players are finding a way to get money to someone to pay for those kids to get there. Then once they come to school, my father's biggest complaint was the NCAA rules would make these kids live in extreme poverty, well below the standard living of the fellow classmates. And he thought that was wrong, particularly for considering the billions of dollars these athletes were bringing in. He was against, my father said, any large cheating, giving out large sums of money, buying them cars, doing anything of substantial value. But if you wanted to have a kid over for dinner, you should be able to do that as a coach. And my father did that. If a kid didn't have anything to wear and he was going someplace and he needed to get a new jacket or something, you bought him a jacket. And everything was all minor stuff. And, you know, one of the big violations they found against UNLV was they were providing free transportation to student athletes. Well, the free transportation was picking a kid up from his apartment and driving him to school when he wasn't in class. You know, they just make the violations look bad, and they're not really bad. So every coach who's recruiting and those type of athletes are all making, they're all cheating the same way, and they all know it. It's the big cheaters, the ones that you're seeing now with the shoe companies paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to come to your school, that should be hammered by the NCAA. And they never even made an allegation my dad gave anything of substantial value to a recruit or any of his boosters or coaches.
Again, our guest right now is Danny Tarkanian, the son of legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian. And Danny, when you talk about the success that your dad had, putting the NCAA allegations and the troubles with the NCAA aside, I've always felt that one of the biggest sticking points for your father in winning at the college level was the fact that he had that natural knack to find talent. And a lot of the times, he would even dig into junior college transfers, which is so interesting to me, especially here in this area where we have junior college basketball that's played at an extremely high level. You grab a kid like Larry Johnson, and you can get him to buy in playing together, playing fast, playing, I guess, in a different realm with kids who have already committed to a four-year school, bypassing that junior college level. That's what was fascinating to me about your father.
Yeah, and I went through that a lot in the book. Most of the kids that go to junior college are kids that either were poor students or got in trouble off the court. My father, when he was growing up, he was Armenian heritage that was growing up in the Central Valley, California, so they were discriminated against. They had no money. He was a horrible student. It took him 6 years to graduate from college, and he said if he hadn't met my mother, it had been 10 years. He was got in trouble off the court doing stupid things. So he understood these players that he was recruiting. A lot of coaches wouldn't touch these players. In fact, in the book, I have a quote from Matt Doherty. He used to coach with Roy Williams, and he said, "Danny, don't take this the wrong way, but we wouldn't recruit the players your father does. We just couldn't coach them because these guys all had problems." Well, my dad understood those problems because of the way he grew up. He was able to motivate these players through sarcasm and wit as opposed to being a tyrant and a bully. And he got them to play together cohesively as a team. These players had the same type of talent as those great players that were going to UCLA and Duke, except they weren't as good as students, and they had personal problems off the court. And my father felt that he could win with them, and he did.
Your dad goes to UNLV in 1973, and the school hadn't been around, at least for a Division I program, for that very long. And I think in today's day and age, where we're talking about professional sports in Las Vegas, right? We have the Golden Knights. We'll soon have the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't think it's that far off from having an NBA team in Vegas. All this being said, people need to remember that the first big sports show in Las Vegas, that was UNLV. Going back to 1983, this was because of Tarkanian's success. You got to see this up close and personal. And it wasn't just the game, and it wasn't just the athletes that he was bringing in. It was the pregame fireworks. There were theatrics. It was the first big show in Vegas for a sporting event. That revolves around UNLV and Jerry Tarkanian.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right, and I touched upon that in the book. Las Vegas is the entertainment capital of the world, and the biggest entertainment show in Las Vegas during my father's 19 years there was the Running Rebels. They played not only one big, but they played the most exciting brand of basketball you can play. In 1975-76, they started the run-and-gun style of play with a pressure defense. They averaged 108 points a game and 110 points a game those 2 years. That was without the shot clock or the three-point line. So you're playing this exciting brand of basketball. You're winning big. There is fourth year at UNLV. They went to the Final Four and lost to a North Carolina team by 1 point who had four Olympians on it and coached by the Olympic coach. So they were winning. They had the exciting brand of basketball. But you said, the great pregame show. I mean, it was amazing. We had fireworks. We had the strobe lights. We had the laser sharks, and it was something else. And we had Gucci Row, which is like what the Lakers have now, where all their movie stars would come and sit in the front row, or the real wealthy people. We had Gucci Row before that, where you had Frank Sinatra, Diana Ross, Dean Martin, they'd come to the games. Wayne Newton was singing the national anthem. Some of them would even come to practice. You couldn't get a ticket to the game. It was impossible. They used to have people sitting in the aisles where there was a fire risk, and they would just let it go because you couldn't get them to move. It was a wonderful experience, something that you appreciate so much more after it's done.
Danny, and again, I haven't read the entire book, and so this question I'm going to ask you, if it is discussed at all in the book, I apologize. I heard a rumor once upon a time that Gucci Rowe, and again, as you were just mentioning, where you had the rich and famous sitting courtside, that had a lot to do with your dad. Is it true that your dad had negotiated a certain ticket allotment into his contract with UNLV?
He did, but not for any Gucci Rowe seat. They gave him the seats up higher. Gucci Rowe was the front row where the scholarship people who had all the money and or the celebrities that had to pull the juice, they sat. But my father did. He actually he got so many seats, I forget, when under his contract. I think it was 10% at the convention center, which was at that time 6,000 some. So he got like 64 seats to each game. Then when they went to the Thomas and Mack Center, it was 18,000. So he was provided several hundred tickets. And he used those tickets to give them out to boosters around town, casino hosts. And in exchange, he went anywhere he wanted. Las Vegas ate for free. He would go to shows for free. It was something that it's unheard of in today's day and age of corporate ownership of these casinos. But back then, it was the most amazing time to grow up in.
Well, Danny, there's plenty more I would love to talk with you about. We do got a break for just a moment. Do you have time to hang around for one more segment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. More coming up with Danny Tarkanian, the son of Jerry Tarkanian. We'll talk about his new book and more about his father's legendary career right here on Drive Time Sports.